Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning. I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Coming up, The Five with Steph Curtis. What to watch, listen to, and read on this 4th of July weekend. But first, women athletes deserve more respect. Why don't they get it? The pay disparity is one thing. We're definitely going to talk about that. But the crap they take on athletic ability and level of competition is something else. The women on our dominant U.S. soccer team know this. The women who crush it on the WNBA know it. Venus and Serena Williams know it. Is it all that different way back when Billie Jean King, long after kicking Bobby Riggs' rear, said, "Everyone thinks women should be thrilled when we get the crumbs. I want women to have the cake, the icing, and the cherry on top, too." Two guests to figure this out with us, and I want to hear from you. As a female athlete or the parent of one, have you encountered that you play like a girl in the worst sense of the word? Why do you think women's sports don't get the marketing or the pay that they deserve? Or are you of the opinion that women's competition just isn't that interesting? Call in with that if you dare. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. On Twitter, at Carrie NPR. Our guest, Dr. Angel Brutus, is with us, Director of Counseling and Sports Psychology at Mississippi University. And she's with us today from Starkville, Mississippi. Angel, welcome back to the show. It's good to have you.
Thanks for having me again. Love to speak with you again.
Really good to have you on. Lindsay Gibbs is with us. She's a sports reporter at Think Progress and co-host of the Burn It All Down podcast. And she's with us from Washington. Lindsay, welcome to the show. Good to have you on the line.
So excited to be here.
Angel, as you're watching this terrific performance by the U.S. women's soccer team, I'm wondering whether this feels like a fleeting moment of adulation and respect, or whether you sense that the seeds of some kind of cultural change are happening with this. What do you think?
I don't necessarily think that it's a seed of cultural change. I think it's long overdue. As you mentioned earlier in the introduction, even Billie Jean King, this is nothing new under the sun. I think that it's time that the stage is taken, and I think that women in sport at this juncture are no longer willing to just sit on the sidelines or be quiet or have stealth modes. I think it's time for the voices to be heard, and I can go on and on about the different intersections that this plays out, but I'm really excited to see these things unfold and doing it in such a way that it's unapologetic.
I guess, Angel, what I'm asking is acknowledging, as you've just done too, that we've been to these points before, and I think women at that point thought things were going to change. Does this feel different than some of these other inflection points where we thought this is the moment that women athletes are going to get the kind of respect they deserve?
I think this is different because we also have allies. The
okay.
allyship, I think, is the major difference. You know, regardless of if an individual belongs to this category of womanhood, we have a lot of allies in this movement right now, and I think that's the major difference as well.
Lindsay, it sounds like you agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah, I loved hearing that. I think one of the exciting things for me about this World Cup has been how many allies, I would say, have noted and said out loud, you know what, I need to do a better job of supporting the National Women's Soccer League, mm-hmm. which is, of course, the professional women's soccer league that is in the United States. And it's like people are realizing this is amazing to watch. This is fun to watch. And it doesn't have to just be every 4 years. You can support these women on a month in, month out basis. And it just takes a little effort. It takes changing your mentality a little bit and opening your mind a little bit. And you're going to gain so much from it because the games are just as entertaining. They're thrilling to watch. And, you know, you can be part of actually growing this sport in a sustainable way. So for me, that has left me cautiously hopeful about the future going forward. But like you said, it's felt like we've been in moments like this before. And what happens is it goes away until the next Women's World Cup. And I think what we have to talk about now is how do we keep it?
Yeah. So Lindsay, you and Angel have made great cases. And I think we're going to have people call up and say, oh, no, I love watching the NBA. The deal is, why do we still have to sell the idea? You know, why do we still have to market the idea that you are going to see intense, highest level competition when you go to a game where women athletes are competing against each other? That's what's frustrating about this, but it still feels like we're kind of in that place. How's it look to you?
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's exhausting. And I can't even imagine how exhausting it is for the players.
I know.
I say that every time these women are out there, they're not just playing to win a game. They're like playing for the legitimacy of their entire sport, their entire, you know, gender.
Yeah.
And that's just so unfair.
No,
said. It's really ridiculous.
Yeah. Let me grab a call here from Doug in Duluth. Hi, Doug. Glad you called.
Yeah, thank you for actually taking my call.
What are you thinking about?
Well, I was just listening to you guys, and one of the things that you have brought up was everybody likes to talk about the NBA, and I actually got tickets to go and see the Timberwolves play, and I really wasn't all that impressed with the show that the NBA would put on. And then somebody actually gave me two tickets to go and see the Lynx play. And I swear, it is a completely different deal. These women are not playing just for the money. They're, like you guys had said before, they're playing because they love the game, because they are trying to show that they have what it takes. And it's such a beautiful performance. It's not just three-pointers and dunking all the time. There's strategy being played in these games. They deserve that money.
Okay, so, Doug, the next question is then, did you go buy some tickets to the WNBA? Did you become an ally in that way? What else could you do you think?
I actually bought four more tickets to home games.
Okay, so, way to go. That's being an ally.
I was just that massively impressed.
That's being an ally. You know, Angel, we did a different show where we talked about women's athletics a couple weeks ago. And in preparation for that show, I was reading interviews with NBA players who were talking about this idea of allyship, which was very laudable. But what I kept thinking during the interview was, so it takes the credibility of a Stefan to say, yes, these people are worth it. You know, of a LeBron James to say, yeah, they're worth watching. It is kind of a catch-22 still.
It is. I think, you know, that's just the reality of it. You know, me being a Black woman, there are times where I'm in spaces where I know that I have to have a quote unquote, I'm giving air quotes right now, a sponsor in the room.
Yeah.
Because it's more so about getting the message through to who needs to hear it versus me holding too much pride up to saying, oh no, I need to do this by myself and then not getting anywhere. And so I think it's a strategic relationship that has to be built with true allies, because there are some people who will definitely put on that allyship hat and also still hold on to some of those patriarchal, very oppressive or microaggressive kind of tendencies without even knowing it. And so, you know, there's a level of authenticity that has to come with it as well.
I will say this for Steph Curry. He was talking in this interview about taking his kids to games and not having to make big, you know, declarations about what it meant to support the WNBA, but the value of being seen there with his kids by people in the stands and getting the kind of coverage. So that's something, isn't it?
It is absolutely is, because that's using that platform to normalize the experience, right? As you've hit the nail right on the head. This is not something, you know, 10 years from now, it should not be a headline.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It should be something that's typical and normal and expected.
Yeah, let me grab a call here from Kat in St. Paul. Hi, Kat. Glad you called.
Hi.
Hey, what'd you want to say?
So I am interested in the requirements that women athletes at high levels seem to face to be beautiful and present beautiful fronts to the world, and then the way that centers them as women rather than athletes and exposes them to all the shame and mockery that women get in the world aside from as athletes.
Oh, my gosh. We could do an entire show just on this. But, Lindsay, that's not what we're doing. But I'd love to hear your insight on this. Such a good question.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's any doubt that female athletes have felt the pressure to conform to, you know, traditional patriarchal visions of what femininity should be and what being a woman is. I think there's a lot of racism and homophobia wrapped up in all that, especially when you're talking about women's basketball and talking about the WNBA. But I do have to say that right now, more than ever, women in the WNBA and in women's soccer, which of course I think are the two most visible sports, team sports for female athletes, are really starting to feel much more comfortable with whatever presentation of their gender and their self they, you know, they embrace. And we're just seeing so much more diversity in dress, in hair, in makeup, in everything that makes, you know, women or non-binary people themselves, you know? And I love that. Like, I've just, there was a great article in the New York Times the other day about how players in the WNBA are really kind of breaking through these stereotypes mm-hmm. of, you know, femininity that the female athletes have been beholden to for so long. And for so long, it was either you conform to that, right? Like, either you look like a Skylar Diggins-Smith or an Alex Morgan, or we don't have room to promote you. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And of course, mm-hmm. Skylar Diggins-Smith and Alex Morgan, that's what they look like. They, you know, they there's nothing wrong with that. Like, they should be celebrated. But so should the Abby Wambachs. So should Sylvia Fowles, so should, you know, everyone across the spectrum. And I think we are getting closer to that, but of course, there's still a long way to go.
Wish we could, Angel, I wish we could dial up Serena Williams. oh my gosh, she has dealt with this from so many different dimensions, right up to the cat suit.
Yes,
right?
Yes, the body shaming, the racism, the article actually that Lindsay did not too long ago about, you know, the stereotype of the angry female athlete.
Yes, yeah.
Just in that moment where she, you know, really let it all hang out, so to speak, in that match against Naomi Osaka, who also is an intersectional kind of athlete. We can have conversations about that too later. But in that one moment where Serena just let the judge have it all. If you take that clip, she literally rolls down the list of all of her different intersecting roles that were playing out in that match simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't talk enough about this idea of intersectionality and what that really entails, especially for our women athletes who are navigating different spaces that otherwise are socialized in a different way, that sometimes helps to negate certain parts of their identity, whether it's their sexual orientation or their gender identity or how they identify in race or ethnicity or, you know, all these different roles that we tend to play as women in any given moment in time. And I think that particular moment that Serena had during that match really encompasses so much of what goes on from a psychological standpoint, that it can create such mental fatigue because you are constantly multitasking, trying
right.
to figure out which identity is being salient in the moment and why you're being treated a certain way in that moment.
I was reading something that Alex Morgan wrote about this that really goes to what you've just said, Angel. She said, we have to do more in general. We have to be the athlete. We have to be the role model. We have to lead the way for the next generation. Are male athletes doing that? Are they thinking about anyone other than themselves? I don't know. We do have more than one job within this role, and we're getting paid much less. Yeah, we are also going to talk about pay. I also want to ask our guest, if you're just getting in on the conversation here, by the way, it's taking note of the incredible performance by the U.S. women's soccer team in the World Cup, but also asking a deeper cultural question here about why it is that it is taking years and years for women athletes. I don't want to put this in the past tense. It's taking years for women athletes to get the kind of respect at an athletic, competitive level, at a pay level that they deserve. And we're asking our guests today why that is. Angel Brutus is with us. She's Director of Counseling and Sports Psychology at Mississippi State University. And Lindsay Gibbs is here, sports reporter at Think Progress and co-host of the Burn It All Down podcast. And we're hearing from you as well. As a female athlete or the parent of one, I want to know if you've encountered this, you play like a girl, in the worst sense of the words. Now, I know that that has been reclaimed, but there's still a lot of cultural disrespect around the idea that women just don't rise to the same level of competition as men do. Why do you think women's sports don't get the marketing or the pay that they deserve? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. And on Twitter, at CarrieMPR, where Tara tweets to me, extremely on topic for today, an article from May in SB Nation, the WNBA's male practice squads lose to women all the time and enjoy it. So I'm going to retweet that. She included a link to the article. To the phones to Marcel in St. Paul. Hey, Marcel, hi. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, what are you thinking about?
So I had an encounter with my daughter as she was trying to sign up for a race, an amateur biking. And as Angel said, the socialization starts, and it starts pretty young. Amateur biking's been making efforts to make the prize money for men and women the same. But as she read through the prize money, the women's prize money was less. So as parents, we need to speak out against that. And I've seen some male riders say that they're not going to accept the purse or give the purse to the women so that it can be shared equally. But the socialization starts young, and it even starts in amateur sports, not just professional.
I have to say, I didn't know that this, but why wouldn't it be, right, that it filters down through just about every sport. And Angel, to what Marcel is saying, those messages start to penetrate the subconsciousness of girls at a very young age. You're just not worth as much as the men, and that's why the pay differential.
Absolutely. Again, going back to Billie Jean King, I reference her quite a bit when we start talking about gender equity and pay equity in sport. Even with Venus Williams, a lot of people, you know, still don't know that she does a lot for advocating for pay equity amongst gender in tennis. Mm-hmm. And there's a particular clip, City University of New York redigitized an interview that Billie Jean King did years ago. And she specifically talks on this topic of socialization of gender roles, especially in the household within the family system. Even she talks about her experience of, you know, being left out of a tournament photo because her mom sewed her shorts and wasn't wearing a skirt. You know, so it's even like from the uniforms. It's wow. From, you know, it's institutional, it's logistical, it's all of these different things that start to capture these messages of what you're quote-unquote supposed to be like, whether it's feminine or masculine. And then there's, you know, God forbid, you know, a young man who is growing up and is interested in, you know, activities or participates in things that are traditionally considered, you know, women-oriented or female-oriented, and those messages that they receive. So, you know, I know that this is about women in sport, but there's a lot of messaging that goes on really early. I mean, think about when kids are born and they're in the hospital, they either give them a blue cap or a pink cap.
Uh-huh.
It starts early.
Socialization starts. Hey, Lindsay, I'm sure you don't remember the actual days of the Billie Jean King rise and then this tennis match, but have you seen the documentaries about?
I have. I mean, so, it's a touchstone. You
okay.
know, it's part of this story.
So what strikes me about that is how utterly graceful and gracious she had to be. Ugh. Through, I mean, just. She had, just like Alex Morgan was saying, she had to do it all, right? Be a better athlete. Also be gracious in the face of ridiculous sexism and doubt. I mean, it just wasn't enough to go out there and beat him and be the kind of player overall that she was.
No, she has to be a spokesperson for her sport, for her gender at every single turn and throughout her career. And, you know, something that always stuck with me is talking with her about the media back then and how it was women's magazines that were covering, you know, they didn't send the sports reporters to cover the women's tennis tour. They sent the, you know, women's magazine, you know, the makeup writers to cover. And so she and the other, you know, original founders of the WTA, would have to sit there and explain tennis to the reporters. And they were so grateful for any coverage that they did, you know. They put in that time to actually educate the reporters on the sport. And like you said, she did that very graciously. She doesn't talk about that I'm sure she did feel burdened, but she doesn't talk about that bitterly. She talks about that as like just a genuine part of the process. And even today, you know, women need to do more media. They need to be more accessible. I mean, I cover the WNBA regularly, and those players are very accessible. And you'll often have coaches thank you for, you know, the coverage.
Jeez.
And part of me is
it's good,
you know,
it's
nice to. But it's
right.
It should be expected.
Exactly.
It should be expected.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, being here at Mississippi State University, you know, our women's basketball program is thriving. Coach Schaefer and his staff
That's
have done a miraculous job with our women's program. And as you have rightfully said, they're so accessible. Being here for the first year last year, I've never been a part of an organization or a team where after a competition, the players are actually still on the court and socializing with the fans. Usually it's going back into the locker room in isolation, win or lose, getting that team talk, and then coming back out. But there's something special about the culture that they've created here at MSU, and I'm hoping that this trend will continue in other universities, because sometimes the university level is the stopgap for a lot of these women who otherwise would be able to go on to professional levels. But unfortunately, with the WNBA, there's a limited number of teams. And so you have high caliber players who are getting cut left and right and are deserving so able to still play at the professional level. You also have women who unfortunately have to have two jobs where they have to go and play overseas just to supplement the income that they're making at the WNBA. And so it's real unfortunate to see the hard work, the intensity that kind of goes into all of the preparation and the competition level here at the collegiate level to only see individuals' dreams get cut short just because of the lack of accessibility and availability of team development.
Angel, did I hear you say that the women's basketball coach is a man?
Yeah.
Was that right?
Coach Schaefer is a man, but he has an all-female assistant
All right.
Yeah, coaching staff.
Because the last time we talked about women's athletics was a show about since Title IX and more money has flowed into collegiate coaching jobs, many, many of those coaching jobs are going to men. And so we were talking about what the impact, both, you know, athletically and socially, sociologically, that is to have so many men taking these jobs. So Not to diss the coach there, but just to kind of take note of that. To the phones here to Carly in Minneapolis. Hi, Carly.
Hi.
Good to have you on the line. What are you thinking about?
Yeah. So I've been a female athlete for the past 9 years, and I play ultimate frisbee.
Oh,
and
wow.
Gender equity is something that has been such a huge conversation in our sport. And I've gotten to practice that in a lot of different ways. Something that really comes to mind as I've been listening to you is that we play mixed ultimate. So it's mixed with men and women, which is really cool. But you also kind of experience like really close up times of like men kind of being like, oh, like, I didn't throw to you because I didn't think you were open or something like that. So you kind of just get that really, like, close contact.
The subtle, the very subtle kind of stuff. Like, my go-to is still the other guys on the team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's bred, at least for me, I've been a part of teams that have bred a lot of, like, confidence out of me. And I think it's really great. And I think something that I'd like to kind of give a shout out to everyone who pushes for this and ultimate is like starting those conversations. Cause I think as a woman athlete, like it has made me be more like kind of like bossy on the field of like, hey, why didn't you do that? Or let's have a conversation about it.
And yeah. Like naming it, right? Not just pushing it away and ignoring it. That, yeah, Carly, that's a really good point. I think this brings up something I wanted to ask Lindsay about, which is we know that there's a cost for activism. I mean, we've seen this among players of color in the football, in the NFL. I wonder, Lindsay, how often women athletes say, and this goes back to what Alex Morgan was saying, I'm doing this and I'm doing that. I don't know if I've got the capital, right, the social capital and the energy to also be activating for, you know, equity on the field. Not, there's a lot of women athletes who aren't in the position that these women's soccer team players are going to be in, where everybody's going to want to hear what they have to say.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a constant calculation that these athletes are having to do. You know, we've really seen a surge of it. Not that there haven't always been female athlete activists, because of course there have been. But, it's really been a surge over the past few years, whether it be for, equal pay, as we've seen the fight in soccer, whether it be for, more fair play, like we've seen in women's hockey, or whether it be, the WNBA players taking a stand for Black Lives Matter, or Megan Rapinoe talking openly about her, sexuality and, posing in magazines with her girlfriend, Sue Bird, mm-hmm. and, what powerful statements those are. So I think, what I'm seeing more and more from these athletes as I talk to them is everyone has to figure out how to do it that feels true to themselves, And just like among your friend groups, some are more naturally outspoken.
Yeah, that's right.
Some are a little quieter. But I think the good thing is the culture around it. It's becoming more encouraged. And as more and more these female athletes see others using their platform, you're seeing it, it's contagious. And that doesn't mean everyone's going to be, Megan Rapinoe and be that vocal about it. But it's leading to a lot of really powerful and important conversations. And it's, I think, even more importantly, leading to a lot of solidarity when teammates do speak out.
To Karen in St. Paul. Hey, Karen. Hi.
Hey, hi. Thanks so much.
Yeah, glad you hung on.
This conversation is just making me so excited.
Good.
My sister and I were both All-State basketball players in Wisconsin when we were growing up. Mm-hmm. And we would always have the guys who we knew, or just anyone who found out, like we played on the same team, we were only a year apart. As soon as they found out that we were, All-State basketball players, they would want to play us 2-on-1. That was like the constant, repeated request. And I do, in some ways, they were just being, they thought it was funny or something. But having that, said over and over again,
right.
And then also just knowing how much we sweated, for hours and hours and hours every day in the gym and things like that. It just did feel over time to be kind of, we would just roll our eyes and be like, get out of my face. and then also I just want to say one thing when you said requesting about, how can you be supportive?
Yeah.
There were also, women and also, male friends that we had who, would come to our games and would hold up, signs with our numbers on them and came to our away games or followed us where we were going to be going, who we really felt like they were, truly supporting us and wanted us to do well and really appreciated our talents and things like that.
I'm sure that made a difference.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that was a confidence booster in a way too.
Absolutely. Huh. Well, anyway, that's all I would say. But
yeah, I'm glad you,
the conversation.
I'm glad you spoke right to the question that I had actually through the news break. So Lindsay, what is that about? I guarantee you've given some thought to this.
Yeah, I mean, it's about fragile masculinity. I mean, uh-huh. If I have to just boil it down, men, not all men, of course, but we're not gonna dwell on that here. We can speak in broad societal terms. Men have been conditioned to feel threatened by powerful, strong women. So when a you know, 70-year-old man sees Elena Deladon, the 2015 MVP and an MVP candidate for the WNBA this year. He sees her walking onto a plane with her team, the Washington Mystics, you know, a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And this 60-year-old man says, I can beat you one-on-one. He's doing that because he feels threatened by her. He, even if he's saying it in a joking way, he feels threatened by seeing a powerful, rich, 6'5" woman. And, you know, living unapologetically. And there's a part of him that says, I need to shut that down. And, you know, I do. I cover the WNBA regularly, and it is shocking and exhausting and infuriating how many times they hear that. And I still say on anything I write, I don't get anywhere near the hatred, and the people are just aghast that you would even ever imply that female basketball players deserve more money, more investment, more resources.
So when you write about this, you're saying the trolls come out of the woodwork.
The trolls. Yeah. I mean, it is just, it is. So, and, you know, I write for a progressive news organization, and even our, you know, I find that, you know, our readers are, you know, more receptive to the ideas than some, but there still is tons of, you know, people just going back to, it's just what the market dictates. It's just what the market dictates. Ignoring the fact that there are so many outside forces, you know, that have been dictating that market. You know, the market isn't independent from society.
Angel, before you answer, I do want to take Jonathan's call from Duluth, okay, because I think he's going to speak to this idea of on par athletic competition. Am I right, Jonathan?
Yeah, that's right.
What do you want to say about it?
Well, yeah, I mean, I love the conversation. I've been listening all morning, and it's just like,
good.
When I hear, you know, you talk about men saying, oh, I bet I could beat you one-on-one, is because it's true. I mean, like,
Jonathan, go ahead. Yes.
I'm not calling to disrespect.
I gotcha.
I'm not calling to disrespect women playing sports, but when you look at the physicality, I mean, look at, for instance, the world's fastest man, Usain Bolt, he runs 100 meters in 9.5 seconds. The world's fastest woman runs 100 meters in 10.5 seconds. You may think, if you're not into track, that 9.5 and 10.5 is really close. It's nowhere close to each other. There's not one woman on the earth, on the planet Earth, who could come anywhere close to beating Usain Bolt.
But Jonathan, that doesn't mean that any old dude who goes out for a Saturday morning run could beat the fastest woman on the planet. I mean, just...
Go
ahead.
Maybe not an elite Olympic level woman, but the average man is 5'8" and the average woman is 5'4". So when you're talking about, you know, like what an average jock did in high school, and he sees someone who does play sports who's a woman, I mean, of course he could probably still beat her.
Okay, Jonathan, hang on. I got to give Lindsay and Angel a chance to get in here.
Yeah,
Lindsay, go ahead.
This was great timing because one of the things I was going to talk with you guys about is this concept of cultural humility. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that concept.
I'm not.
Basically, it refers to an individual really considering being very open-minded and very curious, at the same time decreasing their tendency to be arrogant and have a genuine desire to really understand another person's cultural identity.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that this is right on par with this last call, that I would highly, highly suggest looking into this concept of cultural humility, because it really does speak a lot to what was just said earlier about, you know, this idea of individuals just automatically assuming and being arrogant that they could beat someone just because they're a different gender from the person standing in front of them. That's just, you know, this is not some clinical thing, but it's absurd to just automatically assume that someone is less than just because of their gender identity. That just does not register with me at all.
Lindsay, you covered the WNBA, and let me bring Jonathan back in here to what Jonathan said. They probably could beat, you know, these WNBA players. Any old guy off. Is that what we're saying here, Jonathan? Any old guy off the neighborhood? Yes. Okay. What do you think, Lindsay?
Wow. Okay, first of all, male athletes who were really strong players in college often do play against WNBA players every single day on practice squads and get routinely beat. So that is just not true. I've seen it. There's an article about it, as you mentioned earlier in the show. And it just, like, we're not talking about Usain Bolt going up to the fastest woman and saying, I can beat you, right? We're not talking about, that's not what's happening. This is a 60-year-old man who went up to a 6'5" WNBA MVP in her prime and said that he could beat her. And if you truly, first of all, if you truly think that that is possible, then you're incredibly mistaken. And second of all, even if you truly felt that, the need to go around saying it and making sure it is heard really says something. And honestly, I'm sorry to be frank, but it goes back to that fragile masculinity. Why do you feel the need to say that? Why do you feel the need to challenge that?
Yeah. So Jonathan, what do you think after all this?
I mean, I hear everything that you're saying, and I respectfully disagree, because if you're just going to come up here and say that a woman can do anything that a man can do, that's you can say that if you want, but you know, a 6'5" tallest woman in the WNBA would get slaughtered against a 7-foot regular center in the NBA.
But that's not what we're comparing right now.
Okay, but But if you're going to say that a woman can do everything that a man can do, then obviously a man can do everything that a woman can do. So why are you not advocating for pregnancy rights for men?
Jonathan, I think we're going little off topic here. But I do respect the fact that you hung in there for a while while we were all yelling at you. So yeah. I appreciate that. Angel and Lindsay, boy, lots more to talk about on this. It's been really great to have you on the show. Thank you much.
Thank you so much.
Angel Brutus with us from Mississippi State University, and Lindsay Gibbs with us, sports reporter at Think Progress and co-host of the Burn It All Down podcast.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to the discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet us at @CarrieMPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all our shows by subscribing to this podcast. You can send us your questions or comments by emailing talk@npr.org.